It's Helping Hand, HBR One Station's Friday's part, all things considered, online at hawaiipublicradio.org, where we keep Helping Hand. Try to put the spotlight on an organization, topic, event, offering assistance to the disabled and others among the most vulnerable. I'm Dave Lawrence. This week, we have a returning guest organization that since 1963 have been helping people here in the Aloha State, Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Hawaii. They've partnered with guardians, schools, corporations, others in the community. They pair kids with carefully screened and trained volunteer mentors, and it's an affiliate of the nation's largest donor and volunteer-supported mentoring network. You undoubtedly have heard of them, but perhaps you have no idea how they work. And today will be a good way to end that ambiguity. They provide over 600 kids facing adversity with strong and enduring, professionally supported one-to-one mentoring relationships, and sometimes they can last for decades. As the CEO and president from Big Brothers Big Sisters of Hawaii can attest, Dennis Brown, he was the very first little brother ever for the organization and makes an excellent representative for them to talk about what they do, and we're welcoming him back right now. Dennis, it's great to see you. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Dave. Great to see you as well.
And background, lots of people have probably heard the name. Somebody may even have known somebody who did it and don't know a lot about it. Sometimes organizations like this have a way of eluding your consciousness in terms of the great things that they're up to. Describe how you guys function.
Well, we are a youth and children's mentoring organization. And the children we serve are those who are facing some sort of adversity or trauma in their life. They may have experienced some trauma. Anything from as simple as a divorce to losing a parent to suicide, having parents removed from the home for not properly parenting, being on drugs or in drug rehab or going to prison. So they're kids that, yes, are facing some sort of adversity, a little greater than maybe the everyday average child would. So we try to intervene by placing a caring, responsible adult in their lives who can guide them, help them feel better about themselves, and really, I think, most importantly, give them some hope for the future.
Age ranges. So obviously, you've described who it could be in the community, and we'll talk a little bit more about how a child is made aware of this or their guardians, but it starts when, and I know obviously it can carry on through one's life, but in terms of when it starts?
Well, we start at age 6, and it'll, as you say, go on, and it could go on forever through the lifetime of both parties. But we do try to get them in as young as possible. I'd say our average age is in the 9, 10, 11 range. But we do have some young ones. And if they're coming into us at 5.5, if the child is mature enough to understand what this is about and say, yes, I want to do that, then we'll go ahead.
Kid always has to say yes. You bring up some really interesting things. So the kid, you can't force a kid to be part of this.
No, it won't work if
won't
you
work.
Do that. That's true.
And we'll dial back in on the children. How old were you when it was brought into your life?
I was 9.
9.
Right.
Henry.
Henry, you remember.
Of course. Well, it's an incredible story. 1963.
The organization was founded in late 1963. We were actually the first match. You know, it took some time to get up and running in March of 1964. So about 4 or 5 months later.
Still. Okay. 1964. I mean, think about that. Beatles, still a touring band.
Right. Henry's car was a brand new model of Ford called the Mustang.
Wow. Brand new.
Convertible. He was, one of the first to.
And what did Henry do for that? I mean, it says a lot, and this is kind of a good way of illustrating people in the community who are listening, who are maybe interested in getting involved with something like this. Not that we can read his mind, and God bless him, he's passed on, but he's somebody who you had as a friend and part of your life for all of your life from 1964 on. But when you met him, like, can you just try to, and I know you can't answer it for him, but what was Henry seeking that he was willing to do this?
You know, Henry was such a giving, caring person in his own quiet way. Typical Asian American, very almost stoic in a lot of ways.
Japanese American, dude.
Japanese American, didn't speak, didn't talk a lot, but he listened. And I think he responded to an advertisement in the newspaper, in the classified ads, looking for men who would like to befriend a child who's in need and be a role model.
And backing up a little on the national, how old is the national organization?
National organization was founded in 1904, so over 120 years.
So it took 60 years to get to Hawaii.
It did, yes.
And it probably, I don't know, let me not say probably, did it take differing amounts of time to get to the rest of the country?
Actually, Hawaii was one of the latest.
Okay.
It did take. It started on the East Coast in New York.
And then it just grew.
And it grew. And so we still to this day nationally have more agencies and services on the East Coast toward the Midwest. And the West Coast and Southwest are still kind of developing.
So, interesting. So, yeah. That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. And that's not a surprise because sometimes organizations, what's the other one that, you think of this? Like Ronald McDonald House. Mm-hmm. Do you know how they started?
No, I don't.
And it was like a Philadelphia Eagles player, and they had a need for one thing in a community, and they teamed up with a McDonald's. And I'm just paraphrasing and shortening it, but I'm just describing how sometimes things do start
right.
very regionally.
Right.
Because you don't think about that when you think of Ronald McDonald House of Hawaii, you know?
No.
And so it's neat how things, so it came out of that one little...
It did. It was a family court judge in New York City who just saw all these kids coming through his court, and they were mostly boys who didn't have a dad. And he thought, we've got... Maybe there's a cure here. Maybe there's a solution. Let's try and pair these boys up with a mentor. I don't know if they call them that then, right. but they call them big brothers. And it just spread from there.
And the judge created the nonprofit, or how did it?
He got a group of businessmen together. And that model was exactly what they did in Hawaii. Judge Gerald Corbett was a family court judge here, saw the exact same thing, knew about Big Brothers of America. And he got three local businessmen together. One of them was Henry Damon of the famous Damon family, Kama'aina family locally, because his son, J.P. Damon, hired me as the first, not the first little brother, but he knew I was the first little brother, but hired me to be the CEO 19 years ago.
So what it also shows is there's an element, especially in a really tiny community like Hawaii, there's an element of networking and relationship building that
very much so
can lead to things like what you just described.
Yes, and that's what we're about, the relationships. Big Brothers Big Sisters is founded and based on the fact that there's a power in friendship. So you take two strangers, one adult, one child, put them together, support them. That's key. Our case management staff supports each of these matches throughout the life of that relationship to make sure it's safe and that the child is getting what they need out of it. So, but that's where the magic, we like to call it, the magic happens is in that relationship.
It's amazing to hear stuff like this. There's so many bad things going on in the world, and then you
right.
have a conversation like this. It's just pretty much devoid of any of that, so it doesn't feel normal, right? Like, are we really having a conversation? Am I dreaming? One of the things that was talking about the evolution of the organization, actually, I guess this is a good fit into the conversation and not just my question list. Holomua Online Mentoring was a new thing previously, and when we talk about the adaptation of the growth, the evolution of this organization, and then adapting into new realms because technology may or may not be a good fit for it, how has that played out in terms of where are we at with that now, and are there other new things like that that the organization is involved in that we need to shine a light on?
Well, so glad you're asking about that because we're so very proud of Holomua. When we first spoke about it a while back, it was a pilot mm-hmm. project for us. Now it's a full-fledged part of our program. And what Holomua is an attempt for us, or it started out as an attempt for us to use technology because that's the way the kids communicate. That's their right. preferred method, especially teens. Because as you can imagine, while we have, I mentioned, we start at 6 years old, a lot of our kids come in at 8, 9, 10. They're okay with having a big brother. They actually think it's pretty cool. It might be fun on first blush. But for a teen, someone who's already past that point, mm-hmm. you know, it's not cool anymore.
Right.
What are you doing here? You know, what are you trying to get me into? And so we had to come up with a way to reach them because there are a lot of them who are in need and don't even realize it. In fact, we actually tried to start the Holomua program now in middle school, so even earlier. Again, they're teens already, but not just high school. And the whole goal is to try to match them with a professional adult in the community who has preferably been to college and preferably graduated and gotten mm-hmm. their degree, so they can model that. And so we're looking for those children or youth or teens who have the potential to do something with their lives after school that, but aren't maybe motivated for whatever reason. Again, they it could go back to what's happening at home. It usually is something going on at home. And so we just graduated our first class of Holomua in May. We had 5 students who graduated. We start them in 9th grade. Hmm. We're now, as I say, we're talking to King Intermediate about starting them in 7th grade. So
these kids did this for 4 years?
They did it for 4 years.
And they still, excuse me, they interact with a Big Brother in person and then also have this online, or it started online? Or?
Yes. So the model is that they meet in person once a month at a minimum. We have a group activity where we get them all together at a minimum once a month. They're able to meet more often if they'd like to outside of that, but we have a group activity for them in between, because we found that research shows it's really important to have at least once a week contact, weekly contact of some form. It could be a phone call. It could be in person. It could be a text. It could be email.
Wow.
So we've set up a chat room for them that's monitored by our case managers just to make sure everything is above board and everything's appropriate. To give the and we give the youths a prompt each week. It's
a
optional.
Topic, something
a topic,
to get it going.
Right, like resiliency, or you know, challenges in school, or challenges at home, or how do I apply to college, and those kinds of things. And just encourage them to reach out to their big brother or big sister, and that's their topic to talk about. Really what it is just a way to get them started, and they open up and start talking about all kinds of things. And what's really cool about it, we found, is that the teens tend to open up that way. It's harder, I think, face-to-face for a lot of them, especially in Hawaii culturally. But when they're able to just write it out in the form that they're used to, they really open up.
And so they're texting on a computer. It's like messages, basically.
Right.
They're messaging each other on a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's using software you guys provide? Or how are they interacting? Is it just regular commercial email, like Gmail? Or what?
Yeah, it's regular commercial. Most of them all have smartphones.
Sure. Just trying to figure out what it is,
how the
thing works. So it's like, it's just you're giving them a concept, and then they're utilizing regular email to do the concept.
Yes,
is how it works. And then question on the prompt. So you said a couple things. You said, like, research shows, or I'm paraphrasing, so forgive me, but I took it like you guys have somehow studied this and realized that you need to have some kind of contact once a week. You said that.
Yes.
So I wanted to hear more about that. Tell me about, how do you know this? What kind of research? Who did the research? And talk about what the findings were.
Well, great question, because it's really fresh for us.
Mm-hmm.
We just recently got this research, and I've forgotten the name of the organization, but it's an organization that deals with, unfortunately, teenage sex trafficking, especially of girls, usually, right? And so what they've found is, when they're trying to help these girls rehabilitate from what they've been through and get their lives back together and feel safe and all of that, they also use a similar form of mentoring. They find people who are willing to spend time with them. And they're the ones that have actually had research done, university research done, or they cite the research that's been done, and found that it's really important, because a week can go by in the life of a youth who's going through this trauma and reliving some of this, whether they'd been taken from the home or picked up off the street or whatever it may be. A week can be a long time. It can be an eternity of just suffering through it without anybody to talk to.
Is it part of it, and maybe I'm completely wrong, is it part of it relationship building? Meaning you spend a week and you don't get in contact, the relationship can pull apart.
It is. It is from the standpoint, you're right, it is from the standpoint of consistency. Because again, that can be a long time for a youth who's going through a bad experience or has gone through. And so that bond that you need to have to trust, it takes that consistent contact.
Okay.
And so that's where they found, you're right, that's the other part of it.
Oh, yeah, I don't want to insert it. I was just curious, because
this
is not, because you can extract a lot for your own life.
Sure.
In this, right? Like,
yes,
so anybody listening
so.
Could hear that and go, wait a minute, I want to know more about that, because you could apply that to your own life and have nothing to do with Big Brothers, Big Sisters. So you could be providing a real valuable community service. So, because, yeah, I don't know, it just feels like if you... I guess it just came to mind, I was thinking of like your old high school friends and how easy it is to fall out with people you knew from lack of contact.
That's true.
And so I guess I was just asserting that concept in my mind of how sad that is. You know, you just get to the point, oh yeah, I'll call you this weekend. You know, they're on the other side of the country and you just don't,
Right.
It's hard to. And that leads me back to your prompt thing. Is part of the reason they have a prompt because sometimes, even when you like someone, you care about them, you just forget, or you're not that motivated. You put it off. And so the prompt is kind of a way, I'm guessing, I could be wrong, but the prompt to me is like, well, this helps to ensure that this is a way to try to help to ensure the conversation happens.
It is. and excuse me, it's part of the agreement that we have with them if they get into the program that, and it's exactly that, it's a prompt. It's a way to get you started. That they will follow that rule, so to speak, you know, because
that rule of regular contact.
Of regular contact, because we know that'll happen. It's just so easy,
right?
Out of sight, out of mind, and we
it's
can't
massive.
Force it, but we want to encourage them that's to be successful in the program and to lead to other rewards, so to speak, like the group activities, because we do some fun things for them.
It's discipline, too, is what you're...
It is.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
If you dissect on that, that's like teaching people discipline. Sometimes it's hard. Those are very hard things.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I have a great friend in Boston, and we haven't talked in so long. We always say we're gonna.
And, you know, I'm not a Facebook person myself, real big on that.
I'm not at all.
But I understand that that's one of the values of it.
Of having
people
that.
Who keep in touch, you know, all over the country with people, former classmates, as you said,
from
high school, that kind of thing.
I mean, when it started.
It works for the people who
use it. Yeah. And when it started, I always found I was on it for years. It was when my mother passed, and I just, it was just too much narcissism to go on that.
Mm-hmm,
and somebody's like bragging with their pictures and look what I'm doing. And then there's research done, of course, and I had to read some article about social currency and how millennials judge people by their posts. And once I read that term, social currency, I was like, deactivate. I don't want it. I don't care. If you're judging me by what I put on this thing, forget it.
Yeah.
But what you said is a huge part of trying to keep those bridges together. And when we were kids, we just didn't have anything. So,
right.
I mean, I think obviously there's going to be a whole lot of research just on the way that this kind of connectivity is changing the world, because now people, you go to high school, you go to college, you can move to the other side of the world, and that interconnectivity is all there, which we never had. And so I think about that online aspect of your program. It's just fascinating to me. So it's not really a replacement of meeting. It's maybe more a bridge for people to come together at all? Or?
Right. It's, you know, it's a little ironic that we've made it, unfortunately, so easy for our big brothers and our big sisters, and even for the youths we serve, to not see each other on a regular basis. When I was the first little brother, it was required every week for half a day on a Saturday or Sunday. It was regulation, and Henry lived up to that. We never failed to meet. In today's world, we found it was hard to get people to live up to that, and it was hard even to recruit big brothers and big sisters, because they'd say, I don't know if I can do that every
single
weekend.
Too much.
Yeah. And so did the kids and the family. They said, hey, she plays soccer or she does this or that. You know, I can't always guarantee that we can do it every week. So we backed way off of that and said, hey, you know, every other week is fine, or
is
even
that
once
what?
A month.
So that ironically was my next question.
Yeah.
What kinds of time commitments are required?
Well, you know, so we do require them to meet in person at least once a month. We prefer 2 to 4 times at least every other weekend if possible. But with the technology use now, we realize that we're going to start saying you need to be in contact at least once a week, even if it's a phone call or a text or even the old-fashioned postcard. We have people who go on trips, business trips, and they say, I don't know if I can be a big brother because I travel too much. Say, hey, your little brother would love to receive a postcard from you from St. Louis or Japan or wherever you're traveling.
Good point.
And it's actually reinforcing. It's reinforcing that no matter where you are, how far away, you stayed in contact.
So you, when you started back in 64, because that's what, one of the things that just fascinates me, just about communication, I guess, because that's what I went to school for, that's what I do, my phony baloney job, you know, like the way, so 64, did you, and I'm not trying to date you, because Dennis is one sharp-dressed, youthful dude, and younger than me practically, so... How did you guys, did you have a regular, forgive me for not knowing, did you, when you called a phone back then, was it direct dial to someone's house, or was it that old, you had to talk to an operator and then they'd connect you to you?
No, we had direct dial. It was an actual dial, a rotary dial phone.
And it called a 7-digit other phone number.
A lot of families, though, and we were kind of fortunate that by the time I was matched with Henry, 9 years old, it wasn't a party line. Because before, you had a party line, and another house actually share the same line and pick up, and your conversation, you know, if you didn't hear the click, you could hear someone else is on the phone, and it wasn't a family member, it was another house. So
yeah, it's, yeah. I mean, the technology really has to, so this organization has had to adapt to all of this stuff.
Yes. And the Holomua model that we use is taken from a national model called Mentor 2.0. Huh. So it's taking mentoring into the 21st century.
Wow.
2.0, you know? And it's by an organization called iMentor, the little I, like, yeah, the iPhone, iMentor. So I heard about this at a conference several years ago, came back and talked to this. I was all excited about it, but to join iMentor just was too expensive for us. We couldn't, if it was $140,000 a year to sign up with them. And my program director at the time, Tyler Kurashige, well, he's our program director now, he was coordinator back then, he said, he went online and looked at the curriculum and said, you know, we could do something similar ourselves,
right,
you know? And so we did. And as I say, our first graduating class of 5 seniors in May, all going to college now. A couple of them community college and culinary arts at KCC.
And these were borderline.
And they were borderline. They were, according to their faculty and even to them, from themselves.
They didn't know if they'd make it.
They're the first to go to college in their families.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, unfortunately, and I'm not speaking specifically about this group, but there are families that, there are families whose family members will sometimes not only not be able to support a child in their quest to go to college because they didn't experience it themselves, but actually almost discourage them,
right,
you know, unfortunately. And that's where, as I mentioned earlier, one of our main goals is to help these children have, through the Big Brother, Big Sister, higher aspirations for themselves and hope. We're not saying your family's wrong,
right,
but, you know, it might be that for you, you can do more.
And that's one of the real subtleties, I guess, of what makes an at-risk kid.
It is.
Because there are little details like, mm-hmm, that people may not realize. That,
yes.
There you go. You got a kid. He's smart. He could do it. But when you have a family and maybe no one's ever gone to college, they wouldn't realize the benefits. And they might see, no, it'd be smarter for you to have a trade or skill. And they,
right,
may have some experience that backs up that viewpoint. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they're trying to, as you said, they're not trying to steer their family member wrong necessarily.
Right. In their view, they're being realistic.
Right.
Or they think that, you know, they have a limited view, unfortunately. Yeah. And I don't mean to say that it has to be college, because we also have a lot of them in the trade.
Sure.
And it's really, the Holomua program is career and or college. It's just having a plan after high school.
Right.
Not,
I think that's
not
what
just
it really
graduating.
Is. A plan.
Yeah. Right.
And it can be a lot of things. The background of these cats, because we've talked a lot about the kids and you mentioned it earlier and I've asked you before, but when you have a world like we're living in now, where it's really hard to even, you know, every day I get up and my phone, invariably, there's another massacre of people. There are a group of people who are being run from one part of the world to another because of their ethnicity. I mean, there's just so many horrific things. And there's a lot of, now you got the sexual predator thing where you've got, you name it, whether it's showbiz, it could be cops, politicians, government ministers. How do you vet these cats who are going to be around not only our kids in general vulnerable, but we're talking about a somewhat more vulnerable population. So how do you really know that the adults are the right folks?
Well, such an important question. We have two major ways. One is the standard background checks. We do national, local. It's a tiered selection.
Does a company
process.
Do that for you?
We have a company. We pay for,
right,
that. But
sure.
Because we're part of a national organization, we have a pretty good deal on that. So we have criminal history checks, we do reference checks, and really the key thing is the interview. We have trained interviewers who probe and ask. This is not your typical job interview.
Sure.
I mean, they're very, very pointed questions because we need to know.
Yeah.
And they need to, if they're not willing to do that, then we can't go forward. And something about the references, that's the second most important. So these two, I say, more important than the criminal history check, because a lot of predators, unfortunately, will commit 100 offenses before they're caught.
Sure.
They may not have committed that yet, so there's no record, but they may, you know. So references are interesting because we ask them to provide references similar to you, the way you would on a job application. But the difference is we're not asking about
your work experience.
Yeah, your work experience.
It's your character.
Or even, yeah. And it's very, very deep into character, because we're going to ask them things, even simple things like, have you ever seen them around children? How do they act? And we're not just asking, oh, he's great with kids. No, it's more like
the questions that,
yeah, what did you see? Because sometimes people who, predators, you know, the record will show that a majority of them surround themselves with children.
Right.
And they're, you know, they're grooming these kids to eventually commit.
Or surrounding themselves with other predators.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's
be real
too.
Careful with the yeah. reference list.
And the thing about the references is these people know. They know what they want to help their friend, but they're not going to cross that line. They're not going to lie
right.
because we make it clear to them without even hitting them over the head with it that your answers are going to affect whether we place this person, a child, in the care of this
yeah.
person.
And it's not some small-time background
no.
check, which is why
right.
I asked the
right.
question.
And the other part of it, excuse me for
sure.
interrupting,
no.
but is that we professionally support each match, and that, unbeknownst especially to the child, is our way of guaranteeing the child safety.
Because it's ongoing surveillance is
right.
what it basically
right.
is. Yeah, and I mean, it's tough that you need this, but it's important to pass that out there so that people who would love to have that opportunity for their kid and are understandably apprehensive because of the nature of society that we live in.
Right. Can't blame
I mean,
them.
There are some states that we live in, they want everyone carrying a weapon wherever they go, which must says what about your neighbors?
Yeah.
The police aren't enough to protect you from your neighbors. You need to be able to protect yourself from your neighbors at all times in some of these places. Yeah, so that's it's important. You guys have a great reputation too. And then the activities can be, so we've determined it could be once a month in person, it's once a week contact, it could be phone, it could be text, it could be a variety of both. It can be, as you pointed out wisely, something as small as sending someone a postcard, a card. You don't even have to put a lot of effort into it, but
right.
the receiving end of that is huge in one's life. And I don't think that changes ever
as absolutely.
You get older. So the activities could be, name some of the general things that you think the kids get involved in with their mentors, just to give people an idea.
Well, first of all, we emphasize free or very low cost, and we actually provide a booklet of activities for them to possibly do, and we constantly update that around town of free or very low cost things. So, you know, we encourage them to do things together, like go to the beach, go to the park, shoot hoops for the guys or the girls who are athletic, kick a soccer ball around, go to the library. Henry's the only one who ever took me bowling. I lived in public housing, and bowling was a big ticket item for us. I'd never go in a bowling alley and pay for that.
So what you're also pointing out is for a lot of these kids, there's a lot of things they've never gotten to do, and it's not going to cost you a whole lot of money to
exactly
make them
right.
have an exciting experience.
So low cost, and the second half of it is new experiences.
And the person... The big brother or sister pays for it.
Yes, yes.
So there's a lot involved. It's really, it's an impressive organization.
Thank you.
And people can support it to help, you know, because obviously it's very humble when you think of what this is and how it works. And somebody, just because they want to try to help someone else out, will part ways with their time and their money. That's huge. It's almost takes you back just saying something like that. And you guys, people can, if you go online, it's bbbshawaii.org, and I'll have that again, and I'll have it online. You can donate money, you can donate goods, time. There are a lot of ways you can support you guys. And if you want to give a plug for that end of it, so I guess I'm saying maybe people can't be a big brother or sister, but they want to do some of this other support. Name some of those ways.
Yes, definitely. The donated goods is an interesting one for us. It's actually like a little business we run. So gently used clothing or small household items, we accept those, and we're able to monetize those by, we have a relationship with Savers Thrift Stores. And nothing goes in the landfill. That's the beauty of Savers. They ship it all away to other countries once they're not sold. And then, of course, money is always a good one. When you mentioned that the big brothers and big sisters are out of pocket as far as when they take them to the movies or anywhere, we try on a monthly basis to have one free activity, a group activity that we sponsor. So if we can get funds for that, that helps. And that's at least one weekend a month that the big brother or big sister doesn't have to pay if they choose to join our activity. Like it could be a hike. We have sponsors for movie days and things like that.
And if people had if there were businesses that were interested in maybe providing a place that people could come and explore or look at, or had an idea for an activity maybe, for you guys? Would it be appropriate for them to contact your organization?
Very much so. Those are some of our favorite ones. When companies give us a tour of their operation or just teach us something or teach the kids something they didn't know, we love those. And very much appreciate that opportunity.
Let me give you the contact information, and hopefully maybe you got some ideas on ways. Maybe there's something in your life you can share with them. bbbshawaii.org. You can give them an email, bbbs@bbbshawaii.org. Phone number is 521-3811. You can get all the contact information, the full-length interview, the radio interview, and all of our other Helping Hand segments at the radio station's website, hawaiipublicradio.org. What else on your mission, ideas, just things that you want to get out there that somehow I failed to rattle out, loose out of your mind? What would they be?
Well, we're always looking for good people to be big brothers, especially, and big sisters. We have a greater need for big brothers. We have more boys. So, please contact us if you're interested in doing something like that. And on the donation side, we also accept used vehicles. If you don't want to sell your old car and you're getting a new car or trade it in, you get the tax benefit on that. So,
and what do you need, more girls rather than girl mentors?
We do need young girls. We have a lot of women who would like to be big sisters. And unfortunately, some single moms out there, they think immediately that their son needs a big brother if there's no dad in the picture, but they forget that their daughter could also use a big sister. And
right.
This is not to take the place of
sure.
mom. It's to be more like a sister, someone that your daughter can talk to. And as I'm sure most moms will know, it does become a challenge as your daughter gets older. So,
like you were saying with the guys, too. I mean, adolescence
yes.
is a...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pretty much one of the real reasons you guys are here.
Right.
To steer,
exactly.
Steer people away from the paths that one could get on. It's Big Brothers Big Sisters of Hawaii, and President and CEO Dennis Brown. And in 1964, several months after the organization arrived here, he was already the very first little brother. Sartoro, what was Henry's last name?
Sumita,
sorry. I knew it was fun. Henry Sumita, very first big brother. And you knew him for, and when did he pass?
He passed in 2011.
Incredible.
And I was totally honored to be one of the people to give a eulogy at his service. His children asked me because they said it was really important to him that we were the first. So,
it's huge stuff. Well, I'm hoping it's a gigantic year of success for you, brother. And it's Dennis Brown, CEO, President, Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Hawaii. Thanks for trying to help out a lot of folks out there. And it's inspiring.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's a real privilege. And thanks for having me today.